A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He loves ghost pepper and Carolina Reaper heat. Bought a hot sauce off Amazon that had the Scoville units on the label, but tasted like gritty, watery punishment. And now he's asking what actually separates a great hot sauce from a mere heat delivery system. And honestly, this is the question hiding inside every bottle on the shelf.
It really is. And the hot sauce market has exploded past $4.2 billion globally, with projections hitting nearly $7 billion by 2032. Hundreds of new brands flooding Amazon every year. But most of them are doing something fundamentally different from what the greats do.
The core question is, what actually happens inside a hot sauce factory? Because I think most people imagine it's just mash peppers, add vinegar, bottle.
That's exactly the misconception. The reality involves microbiology, colloid chemistry, supply chain logistics that span continents. You've got three entirely different production philosophies, and they produce results as different from each other as wine is from vodka. Heat delivery, that's capsaicin solubility, how the heat gets into the liquid and how it releases on your tongue. Texture and mouthfeel. That's emulsion stability, particle size, whether the sauce coats your mouth or feels like sandy water. And flavor complexity. That's fermentation versus fresh pack versus extract, and the difference is enormous.
Why do some hot sauces taste coarse or gritty while others are silky? Daniel's exact word was coarse.
Let's start with the gold standard, because it's been doing this the same way since 1868. Their Avery Island facility in Louisiana now produces 1.2 million bottles per day, and the core process hasn't changed. They take Tabasco peppers, mash them with salt, 18 to 20% salt by weight, which is a lot, and then they age that mash for exactly 3 years in white oak barrels.
For a condiment.
For a condiment. And not just any barrels. These are used Jack Daniel's whiskey barrels that get shipped down from Tennessee. The barrels have already done their whiskey aging, so they've got all those oak-like tones and vanillins and char compounds embedded in the wood, and now they're going to spend 3 more years interacting with pepper mash.
That is the most American supply chain detail I've ever heard. Whiskey barrels get a second career making hot sauce.
It's beautiful. So during those 3 years, the mash is turned every few weeks to redistribute everything. What's happening inside is lactic acid bacteria fermentation, same family of bacteria that makes yogurt, kimchi, sauerkraut. The salt concentration is high enough to suppress anything dangerous but allows the lactobacillus to thrive. They're consuming sugars in the peppers and producing lactic acid, which drops the pH. Meanwhile, esters and volatile aromatic compounds are developing. After 3 years, that mash has transformed into something completely different from what went in.
The fermentation is doing multiple things at once, preserving, acidifying, flavor building.
Then they blend that aged mash with high-grade distilled vinegar at 7% acidity, age it another month to let everything marry, strain out the solids, and bottle. The final pH is between 3.2 and 3.5, which is low enough to prevent botulism without any refrigeration or artificial preservatives. The ingredient list is 3 items long. Peppers, vinegar, salt.
That's it. 3 ingredients, 3 years.
Now contrast that with what Daniel probably got from Amazon. Let's talk about extract-based sauces. Capsaicin, the compound that makes peppers hot, is fat-soluble. It dissolves in oils and alcohols, not water. So if you just throw peppers into vinegar and water, you're not actually extracting much capsaicin. Vinegar is a weak solvent for it.
How does Tabasco get the heat into the sauce if vinegar can't dissolve capsaicin well?
Mechanical breakdown and time. 3 years of the pepper cell walls breaking down in that salty, acidic environment, slowly releasing capsaicinoids into the mash. It's inefficient from a pure heat extraction standpoint, but that inefficiency is exactly what creates the flavor complexity. You're getting capsaicin plus hundreds of other compounds.
Whereas the extract approach is...
They take peppers, usually dried ones, and use ethanol or supercritical carbon dioxide as a solvent to strip out the capsaicin. What you get is a concentrate that can exceed 1 million Scoville heat units. It's essentially capsaicin paint. Pure heat with no fiber, no pepper sugars, no carotenoids, none of the volatile aromatics that give a pepper its actual flavor. Then they dilute that concentrate into water, add vinegar, maybe some xanthan gum, maybe some artificial color to make it look like peppers were involved, and bottle it.
It's the hot sauce equivalent of making orange juice by squeezing an orange versus dumping artificial orange flavoring into water.
And the label on the extract sauce can honestly say 100,000 Scoville units, while delivering an experience that's thin, metallic, and one-dimensional. Daniel mentioned ghost pepper and Carolina Reaper. Those are peppers that naturally have complex fruity, almost floral notes alongside the heat. An extract sauce made with Carolina Reaper oleoresin will give you the burn and absolutely nothing else.
The Scoville number becomes marketing, not quality.
That's the trap. Scoville units measure capsaicin concentration through dilution testing. How many parts sugar water does it take to dilute the heat to undetectable levels? It's a quantitative measure of one compound. It tells you nothing about flavor, texture, how the heat builds or fades, whether it hits the front of your tongue or the back of your throat. A sauce at 50,000 Scoville from whole habaneros can feel hotter and taste infinitely more complex than 100,000 Scoville extract sauce, because the capsaicin in whole pepper sauces is bound up in pepper solids and releases more slowly.
That explains something I've noticed, but never had words for. Sometimes a milder sauce feels more intense.
It's the difference between a slow-release pill and a straight injection. The whole pepper matrix acts as a delivery system that meters out the capsaicin. Extract hits all at once, peaks fast, and then it's just no linger, no development.
Okay, so we've established that fermentation creates flavor complexity that extract can't touch. But what about the texture problem Daniel described? Why does a cheap sauce feel like liquid sandpaper?
This is where we get into particle size and emulsions. Let me bring in Melinda's, because Daniel mentioned loving their sauces, and their process is a perfect contrast.
What's Melinda's doing differently?
Melinda's uses what's called a fresh pack method. They're not fermenting for 3 years. They take fresh habanero peppers, and in their ghost pepper sauce, they also use carrot and papaya puree, and they run everything through a colloid mill.
That sounds like something that belongs in a lab, not a kitchen.
It's a piece of industrial equipment that uses a high-speed rotor spinning against a stationary stator with a tiny gap between them. We're talking fractions of a millimeter. The pepper solids get sheared, crushed, and ground down to particle sizes below 50 microns. For reference, a human tongue can detect grittiness starting around 500 microns. Melinda's is grinding 10 times finer than the threshold of perception.
They're making a sauce where the solid particles are literally too small to feel.
Now, a cheap Amazon sauce might use dried pepper powder or crushed flakes suspended in vinegar and water. They might run it through a blade grinder, you know, the kind of thing you'd use for a smoothie, which produces wildly inconsistent particle sizes, many of them above 500 microns. They skip the homogenization step entirely. The result is a biphasic liquid. Solids settle to the bottom, watery liquid floats on top, and when you pour it on food, you get a gritty, sandy mouthfeel.
Coarse is literally a particle size problem.
It's a manufacturing choice, or more accurately, a manufacturing shortcut. A colloid mill costs money. 3 years of barrel aging costs money. Dried pepper powder and a blade grinder cost very little.
There's another piece of this texture puzzle, right? The separation thing. You mentioned biphasic liquid. Why does a sauce separate into layers?
Hot sauce is fundamentally an oil and water emulsion. Capsaicin oils and other pepper oils are dispersed as tiny droplets throughout a water and vinegar continuous phase. Without a stabilizer, those oil droplets find each other, coalesce, and rise to the top. You get an oily slick and a watery bottom layer. It's the same physics as salad dressing separating.
How do the good sauces prevent this?
Xanthan gum, mostly. And this is a misconception worth busting. Xanthan gum isn't some cheap filler. It's used by premium brands including Melinda's and even Tabasco's newer varieties. It's produced by bacterial fermentation of sugars, and it creates what's called a weak gel network. At very low concentrations, we're talking 0.1% by weight, the xanthan molecules form a structure that physically traps oil droplets and prevents them from coalescing. The sauce stays uniform.
Too much, and you get that weird, almost slimy texture.
Above about 0.5%, xanthan gum produces a texture that people describe as snotty or slimy. It's a dosage issue. Melinda's uses it at the low end of the range, just enough to stabilize the emulsion without changing the mouthfeel. Cheap sauces sometimes overdo it to compensate for lack of pepper solids, and you get this gloppy, unnatural consistency.
Melinda's is using Freshpak colloid milling to sub-50 micron particles, xanthan gum as a stabilizer at the right dose, and carrot and papaya puree as natural thickeners. What do the carrot and papaya actually do?
They contribute body and viscosity without needing more xanthan gum. They add natural sweetness that buffers the heat. You're not just getting punched in the face by capsaicin, you're getting a rounded flavor profile where the sweetness arrives first and the heat builds behind it. And they contribute to the color and mouthfeel. Papaya in particular has enzymes, papain, that can subtly break down proteins, which might actually affect how the sauce interacts with food on your tongue.
That's a level of intentionality that just doesn't exist in an extract sauce.
It shows in the ingredient list. A good sauce reads like food. Melinda's ghost pepper sauce, habanero peppers, carrots, papaya, vinegar, salt, xanthan gum. A cheap ghost pepper sauce, water, vinegar, oleoresin capsicum, salt, xanthan gum, sodium benzoate, artificial color. The first ingredient is water.
Water, as the first ingredient in a hot sauce, is a red flag.
It tells you the pepper content is minimal. They're building a liquid base and adding heat extract and thickeners to simulate what a real pepper sauce would be.
Let's talk about pH and preservation, because I think there's another misconception lurking here. People assume natural. Hot sauce doesn't need preservatives because vinegar preserves everything.
Only if the pH is low enough. The threshold for preventing botulism, specifically Clostridium botulinum spore germination, is a pH below 4.6. Tabasco sits at 3.2 to 3.5, which is well within the safe zone. Belinda's hits around 3.8 using vinegar and lime juice. No artificial preservatives needed.
Not every natural sauce gets there.
Plenty of small batch sauces, especially ones that load up on low acid ingredients like roasted garlic or fruit purees, can have a pH above 5. At that level, you either need refrigeration or you need chemical preservatives like sodium benzoate. And sodium benzoate has a taste. It adds this faint chemical note that people often describe as medicinal or band-aid-like. It's subtle, but once you notice it, you can't unnotice it.
The pH isn't just a safety question, it's a flavor question.
Everything in hot sauce is connected. The pH affects safety, which affects whether you need preservatives, which affects flavor. The particle size affects texture, which affects how the capsaicin releases, which affects perceived heat. The production method, fermentation versus fresh pack versus extract, affects everything downstream.
This is starting to feel less like cooking and more like chemical engineering.
It is chemical engineering. It just happens to produce something delicious. Or, in the case of Daniel's disappointing Amazon sauce, something that technically meets the definition of hot sauce while failing at the actual job of being a condiment.
Which brings us to the practical question. Daniel standing in the hot sauce aisle or scrolling through listings, and he wants to avoid another dud. What does he look for?
Rule 1. Read the ingredient list. If you see oleoresin capsicum anywhere on it, put the bottle back. That's an extract sauce, and it will taste thin and one-dimensional regardless of what Scoville number they print on the front.
What about natural flavors?
That's often a euphemism for extract. If natural flavors appears before the actual pepper name in the ingredient list, they're using extract as the primary heat source, and the pepper puree is window dressing.
The first ingredient should be peppers, or pepper puree.
Look for whole pepper puree, or at minimum, peppers listed first. Not water, not vinegar, peppers. Melinda's lists habanero peppers first. Tabasco lists peppers first. Marie Sharp's, which is another fantastic producer out of Belize, lists habanero peppers first, followed by carrots, onions, lime juice, and salt. That's it.
Tell me about Marie Sharp's, actually. I've seen the label, but don't know their process.
Marie Sharp's uses a 3-stage fermentation process in Belize. They hand-stir their pepper mash, they use habaneros grown on their own farm, and they combine the fermented mash with fresh carrots, onions, and lime. No extracts, no gums, no preservatives. The fermentation and the natural acidity handle everything. The carrot isn't just a thickener there, it's a core flavor component. Their sauces have this distinctive bright vegetal sweetness that balances the habanero fruitiness.
We've got Tabasco doing the 3-year barrel ferment, Melinda's doing fresh pack with colloid milling, Marie Sharp's doing traditional fermentation with vegetable purees. Three totally different approaches, all producing excellent sauces.
All of them share the same thing. They start with whole peppers, and they treat the production process as a craft, not just a heat delivery system.
Here's a practical tip I want to pull out. You said something earlier about shaking the bottle.
In the store, before you buy, shake the bottle. A good hot sauce should have a uniform, slightly viscous consistency. When you tilt it or shake it, it should cling to the bottle walls and slowly slide down. If it separates immediately, watery layer on top, solid sinking, that's a sauce with poor emulsion stability. It's going to pour inconsistently and feel thin.
The shake test is the hot sauce equivalent of checking the legs on a wine.
You're looking for the sauce to have body. And if you see a sauce that's completely opaque and uniform, that's usually a good sign. It means the solids are finely milled and well dispersed.
What about color? I've noticed some of those cheap sauces have this almost neon red color that doesn't look like any pepper I've ever seen.
That's often artificial color. Real pepper sauces range from orange to deep red to brownish, depending on the peppers and the process. Fermented sauces tend to be darker, more muted. Extract sauces sometimes add red 40 or paprika oleo resin for color to make them look vibrant. If the color looks like it belongs on a sports car, be suspicious.
You mentioned another dimension earlier that I want to circle back to, this idea that capsaicin release rate affects perceived heat. Can you dig into that more?
When you eat a whole pepper sauce, the capsaicin is embedded in a matrix of pepper cell walls, fibers, and other plant material. Your saliva and chewing have to physically break that matrix down to release the capsaicin. So the heat builds gradually over maybe 10 to 15 seconds, peaks, and then fades slowly. With an extract sauce, the capsaicin is essentially free. It's already dissolved in the liquid phase, and it hits your TRPV1 receptors immediately. Fast on, fast off.
TRPV1 receptors, being the pain receptors the capsaicin binds to.
Right, the same receptors that detect actual heat. That's why capsaicin feels hot. It's literally triggering the same neural pathway as touching a hot surface. But the binding kinetics matter. A slow build lets you experience the pepper's flavor before the heat overwhelms everything. An instant hit just gives you pain with no preamble.
The same Scoville number can produce wildly different subjective experiences depending on the delivery matrix.
This is why Scoville ratings are almost useless for comparing sauces across different production methods. A 50,000 SHU whole habanero sauce might feel hotter and more satisfying than a 100,000 SHU extract sauce, because the extract sauce gives you a brief spike and then nothing, while the whole pepper sauce builds and lingers.
The extract sauce is the hot sauce equivalent of a jump scare. The whole pepper sauce is a suspense film.
That is a perfect way to put it. The jump scare makes you flinch and then it's over. The suspense film keeps you engaged for 2 hours.
For Daniel, who genuinely likes high heat, ghost pepper, Carolina Reaper, the advice isn't avoid heat. It's seek out heat that comes from whole peppers processed with care.
There are craft producers doing incredible things with super hot peppers. Heartbeat Hot Sauce out of Canada makes a ghost pepper sauce with bell peppers and onions that's flavorful. Puckerbutt Pepper Company. The folks who originally bred the Carolina Reaper, they make whole pepper sauces from their own peppers. The heat level is extreme, but it's not one-dimensional.
If you've already bought a disappointing sauce, is there anything you can do to rescue it?
This is a kitchen hack I recommend. If you've got a thin, watery hot sauce that separates, you can add xanthan gum at 0.1 to 0.3% by weight. For a typical 5-ounce bottle, that's about a 1/16 of a teaspoon. Blend it with an immersion blender for 30 seconds. The sauce will transform, it'll become uniform, slightly viscous, and it'll cling to food instead of running off.
That's remarkably specific and useful.
Xanthan gum is available at most grocery stores now, usually in the baking or gluten-free section. Bob's Red Mill sells it. The key is the dosage. Too much and you get slime, too little and it doesn't stabilize. Start small, blend thoroughly, and let it sit for 5 minutes before you judge the texture.
What about flavor? Can you fix a one-dimensional extract sauce?
That's harder. You can add roasted garlic powder, a touch of lime juice, maybe some fruit puree, mango or papaya, to give it some body and sweetness. But you're essentially building a new sauce on top of the extract base. At some point, it's more effort than just buying a better sauce.
Let me ask a bigger picture question. The hot sauce market is growing fast. Super hot peppers are getting more attention. And there's this cultural fascination with extreme heat. YouTube challenge videos. The whole, how much pain can you tolerate thing. Is that pushing the industry toward extract-based shortcuts?
It's a real tension. The challenge market wants Scoville numbers to brag about, and extract is the cheapest way to hit those numbers. A sauce made from whole Carolina Reapers might top out around 200,000 SHU in the bottle. Add some oleoresin capsicum, and you can slap 1 million Scoville on the label for a fraction of the pepper cost.
The market incentive is to optimize for the number, not the experience.
But there's a counter trend, too. Just like what happened with craft beer and specialty coffee, there's a growing segment of consumers who want to understand the process. They want to know where the peppers were grown, how the sauce was fermented, what the pH is. The same way people learn to read a wine label or a coffee bag, they're learning to read a hot sauce label.
The craft revival analogy is interesting. Are we seeing small batch hot sauce makers who are explicitly modeling themselves on craft breweries?
There are dozens of them now. They're doing single-origin pepper sauces, vintage-dated ferments, barrel-aging experiments with different wood types. Some are even doing wild fermentation. No added starter culture, just whatever lactobacillus is on the peppers when they come off the plant. The results are unpredictable and sometimes brilliant.
Single-origin hot sauce. We really have reached peak artisanal.
It sounds ridiculous until you taste the difference between a habanero grown in Belize versus one grown in a greenhouse in the Netherlands. The terroir matters. Soil composition, sun exposure, water stress, all of it affects the capsaicin levels and the flavor compounds in the pepper.
Which brings up another dimension I hadn't considered. Tabasco is now growing peppers in Honduras and Colombia, not just Louisiana. If pepper-growing regions shift, the flavor profiles of classic sauces could change.
That's already happening. The Tabasco pepper is a specific cultivar, Capsicum frutescens, and it's sensitive to temperature and humidity. As Louisiana's growing season gets hotter and more unpredictable, the company has diversified its sourcing. But peppers grown in different soils with different water and different sun exposure produce different flavor profiles, even if they're the same cultivar. A Tabasco sauce made from Honduran peppers won't taste identical to one made from Avery Island peppers.
Daniel, as someone who's developed a palate for this stuff, might find that his favorite sauces subtly shift over the next decade.
That makes the label reading skill even more important. Knowing which brands are transparent about their sourcing and process gives you a way to navigate a changing landscape.
Let's pull this together into something actionable. If Daniel's standing in front of a shelf right now, or scrolling through listings, what's his checklist?
1. Read the ingredient list. Whole pepper puree should be first. If you see oleoresin capsicum or natural flavors before the pepper, skip it. 2. Shake the bottle. It should be uniform and slightly viscous, not watery, with visible separation. 3. Look at the pH if it's listed. Below 4.0 is ideal, below 4.6 is safe. If the pH isn't listed but the ingredients are just peppers, vinegar, and salt, you're probably fine. 4. Seek out brands that disclose their process. Tabasco tells you about the 3-year barrel fermentation. Melinda's talks about their colloid milling. Marie Sharp's talks about their farm and their hand stirring. If a brand only markets Scoville numbers and nothing else, they're telling you what their priority is.
The Scoville number is the hot sauce equivalent of a processed food shouting, "Now with more protein" on the box. It's a signal that they're optimizing for the label claim, not the eating experience.
If you want high heat that actually tastes good, look for sauces that use super hot peppers as whole peppers, not as extract. The ingredient list will say Carolina Reaper pepper puree or ghost pepper mash, not oleoresin capsicum.
One more thing I want to mention. Daniel specifically said he loves Melinda's. That's not an accident. Melinda's occupies this interesting middle ground. They're not doing a 3-year barrel ferment like Tabasco, and they're not a tiny craft producer, but their fresh pack method with colloid milling hits a sweet spot between efficiency and quality. The carrot and papaya in their ghost pepper sauce aren't fillers. They're flavor buffers that make the heat approachable without diluting it.
That approachability is what makes a hot sauce, a condiment rather than a dare. A condiment is something you reach for regularly, something that enhances food rather than punishing you. The best hot sauces make you want to put them on everything, not prove something to yourself.
The extract sauces with the big Scoville numbers, they're not condiments, they're stunts.
They're the hot sauce equivalent of a theme park ride. Fun once, maybe, but you're not going to commute on a roller coaster.
Now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
Radio astronomers studying archival data from the 1960s discovered a document from an observing run in the Simpson Desert, where a technician recorded unexplained intermittent signals at 142 megahertz and annotated the log with a hand-drawn sketch of a camel wearing what appears to be a bishop's mitre. The signals were later attributed to a faulty cable connection, but the drawing remains unexplained.
I have so many questions, and I want exactly zero of them answered.
The camel had a mitre. That's canon now.
Here's the question I'm left with. As super hot peppers keep getting bred to be hotter and hotter, we've gone from habanero to ghost pepper to Carolina Reaper to Pepper X in about 2 decades. Will hot sauce makers be forced to abandon traditional methods to keep up? Or is the craft revival strong enough that we'll see barrel-fermented Reaper sauces and colloid-milled scorpion sauces become the norm?
I think we'll see both paths. The challenge market will keep pushing extract-based sauces with ever higher Scoville numbers, and the craft market will keep pushing whole pepper sauces that treat heat as one component of a complete flavor experience. The interesting question is, which path the mainstream consumer follows?
My money's on craft. Once you've tasted the difference, you can't untaste it. Daniel's Amazon disappointment wasn't just a bad purchase. It was an education. He now knows what separates a great sauce from a heat delivery system, and that knowledge changes how he shops forever.
That's really the point. Next time you reach for a hot sauce, read the label like a wine label. The information is there if you know what to look for.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping this show running. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com. And if you've got a hot sauce horror story or a craft brand you swear by, leave us a review. We'd love to hear about it.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.